Welcome back, everyone, to another installment of our Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Reaction Commentary Series, the show catered to the longtime S.H.I.E.L.D. fan that wants to come back on here and talk endlessly about one of our favorite shows of all time, perhaps the single most underappreciated, underrated show of the 2010s and maybe even to this very day. Of course, I'm Alexis Soto, joined today by David Francisco of the Red Spotlight Network here, of course, wanting to just spread the love of this show every week as long as we possibly can. Last week's episode, Bouncing Back, we had the introduction of Yo-Yo, Elena Rodriguez, played by Natalia Cordova Buckley. And also the beginning of a brand new season-ish. It's season 3B. And this week, we have The Inside Man, episode 12, which was broadcast on March 15, 2016, to 2.94 million viewers. It was written by Craig Titley and directed by John Terleski. Of course, it returns our main cast, Clark Gregg, Ming-Na Wen, Brad Dalton, Chloe Bennett, Inda Kasker, Elizabeth Henstridge, Nick Blood, Adrian Palicki, and Luke Mitchell, alongside guest appearances by Powers Booth as Gideon Malik, Brian Patrick Wade as Carl Creel, Mark DeCascos as Guerra, Gabriel Salvador as Lucio, Ravil Asanov as Anton Petrov, and Adrian Pazdar as Glenn Talbot. As far as the production of the show is concerned, we've got nothing. So that's kind of where we are. David, do we have any comments from last week?
We never uploaded the video, so no.
Oh, we don't have any comments. Okay, no. Well, yeah.
Yeah, sorry for that.
I got
upload because
no, I've,
we
I've
were
got
all
nothing.
Yeah, like I said, our schedules kind of suck, so.
Yeah, it's kind of been topsy-turvy lately, so it's a lot happening. So let's just go ahead and jump into the episode, and let's not waste any more time with that. All right, let's go ahead and press play in 3, 2, 1, and go. Previously on Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Not gonna lie, there's something just very satisfying of seeing him lie dead on the floor like that. Until that happens. That's a very lethal power.
Oh, yeah. again with the makeup, but the dude's glasses looks really good.
Yeah.
It's scary. Mm-hmm.
It was kind of gross.
Actually, I didn't see. Did his hand stay, like, dead? Did he lose the hand when he absorbed the Magneto, whatever the heck?
Who?
Grant Ward. Like, you know how he used his hand to, like, spread whatever thing he did to the other powered guy in the last episode? No, and I didn't notice whether he lost a hand or not.
Oh, I think there was a part of his, I guess, whatever skin was like disappearing into, I guess, a little dust. I guess it's different whenever he uses it. What is that called? Being trained by May, that's
May kind of trains everybody, huh? She trained Daisy.
In a way, yeah. I mean, she's mom, isn't she?
Yeah. She helped Bobby. Oh, she didn't train her, but, like, she really helped her out, you know, with the rehab. And now him. I think that's about it, but...
There will be others.
Mm-hmm.
I think that guy needed that crowbar. Yeah. He just fucking jacked it. I was like... But, I mean, she's thinking ahead because, I mean, she was already, like, this move that she's going to have right now. I mean, like, using powers against himself.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
Yeah, they really fucked up there. They just assumed.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I mean...
But I like this thing, though. It was cool setup of, like, a whole bunch of stuff. One thing,
yeah.
The sun, which I honestly did forget about it for a moment. I don't think we... Did we ever see him? We must have.
Once before.
Yeah, we did. Before. I remember now. So a good reminder, especially with the whole thing with his wife, and then Lincoln's little outburst there. Obviously we saw it in the past ones, but we always kind of saw it as like, it's an add-on to what the situation that he was going through. So, didn't really think about it much, but this one though, it's like, they keep showing us little by little that there's something up with him. I like it.
David, what happened?
No, nothing.
Oh, okay, fuck. It's like you paused yourself or something.
Yeah, I was thinking about saying something else, but then I'm like, nah, I don't got nothing else.
Okay. Hey.
Yeah.
Speaking of. You see that reaction there is like, what the fuck was that? Yeah, we like to hear that.
Yeah, I really. He has like a lot of little subtle acting moments in this episode so far. Like when he told him to control the dude with the glasses. Like I just liked a little bit of him going like, please control him, you know? And then just again, that moment where he was just kind of like, the fuck? We? What do you mean?
Just feel like that scene really established a couple of, well, it kind of like was teasing some things out there when Hive was like, I know you're not offering yourself, Gideon. Like, you have to keep in mind that he has the memories of his brother who he sacrificed. He threw under the bus, basically. So, I mean, Hive's already kind of like planning a little bit of like a just desserts revenge for Gideon. And you can also just see how like disposable anyone around him is. How Gideon was just like, perhaps you'd like to have Giera. Giera's like, what the fuck? I didn't like offer that myself. And then, yeah, Hunter really can't control his anger here, which, I mean, he did lose Isabel Hartley in Idaho, his two like other best friends, because of Creel. So we can understand that. And May, being May, just like blunt and cold, just like, hey, you're here for Bobby. That's the only reason you're here, which, I mean, is brutal. I think it's true, but I don't think it's 100% true. Mm-hmm. I do think he cares deeply for the people on this team, and I think that that's also setting up the next episode, which is going to be the culmination of the entirety of those of his character and Bobby's character on this show. So it's like, again, it's just an awkward place to have two major characters exit, but you can just see like they're just like scrambling in a way to just like set it up, which I've seen very, 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 very just like not so good ways of doing that.
This is a great episode for Talbot. So many funny bits here.
Really?
Oh my god.
Well, the sad thing is, like, I mean, that ends up being one of the guys actually.
Yeah.
That associates himself with Malik. The whole thing with like he's Russian. So this is 2016. It's interesting because at this point, when this was written and when this was aired, people didn't necessarily have that much of an antagonistic viewpoint of Russia or Vladimir Putin. It wasn't until later on in 2016 when they were trying to influence the outcome of an election that all this kind of like blew open. So. But yeah, this is a really good episode for Talbot. Just everything that he says.
Actually, one thing I noticed, so he's mind controlling both of them, but what I really like that's already showing is that they're still themselves. Like, it's not just straight up like, yes, we'll do what you say and all that. It's like, no,
they're not zombies. Yeah. They're still themselves. They mm-hmm. just, they're a part of him now.
Yeah. I like it.
It would be really like boring if they're just zombies, you know? That would just be like, okay.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know what's funny? I'm just like, it's as if like the people on the show, hey, maybe we should have a scene with Daisy and Lincoln. I'm just like, oh shit, I haven't seen a sequence of the two of them together alone in how long?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. I do think, honestly, the more that I'm like watching this season, it really does feel like Jed Moe or the producers felt like season two was more than enough to set up Daisy and Lincoln as a thing. Because when we get to season three, so much of the first half of season three is spent with like Lincoln on the run. Lincoln basically trying to like get away from S.H.I.E.L.D., get away from her. Then he comes onto the base seeking refuge, and because of that happenstance, having to be part of the team, and then they just hook up.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, it feels like we skipped the part where a romance actually starts blooming. Like, and I'm not, I mean, like a genuine like relationship forming, not just like an attraction of one another, you know? Like, mm-hmm. I feel like if they maybe took it a little bit slower, it would have been better. That being said, maybe it was not going to work out anyway because we're 11 episodes, 12 episodes in, and I'm not feeling anything.
Yeah.
For it. So I from a writing standpoint, you could improve it, but something is not clicking
mm-hmm.
with Chloe Bennett and with Luke Mitchell.
I think they just got stuck with, you know, they're going to give him like these anger issues that he had like a rough past and all that. And I think they just didn't want to like rehash what they did with her. What the fuck? My light fell down.
Are you okay?
Yeah. That scared the fuck out of me. Oh my God. I'll forget it in a second. It's all dark now. Oh shit.
Okay.
Oh shoot. What was I going to say? Oh yeah. They didn't want to like rehash what they did with her and Ward, where it was just their, you know, trauma that kind of brought them together. I think even watching this scene, they were really trying to be kind of give them a connection through just like this happy moment to where they're at now, rather like basically just focusing on where they're at now rather than focusing on their past and all that. And I think that's what they were maybe trying to do, but it's not, but we haven't gotten enough from his past to kind of make it feel like maybe there is more of a connection between the two of them. I don't know if that makes any sense, but yeah, I think they were just very much stuck onto like, how should we make these two fall in love with each other that has nothing to do with trauma? Because I mean, that's not what they did with Fitz and Simmons, you know. It's their love of science and all that that kind of brings them a connection, and they always love seeing each other at their best when they're doing something sciency and all that.
It's hilarious how Bobby just did that so effortlessly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'll just walk on the ledge and enter through a window.
Yeah.
What are you making of... I don't know if the show ever went anywhere with it, but like the idea of using Carl Creel's blood to maybe create a vaccine for Terrigenesis, because apparently like, Carl Creel's DNA is like breaking down the Terrigen the same way that his blood broke down the poison from the obelisk when he touched it at the beginning of season two.
Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting. I'm not sure if it goes anywhere necessarily, not that I can recall, but I think they more so use this as a way to kind of create friction or conflict between Daisy and Lincoln, because, oh yeah, that's also part of what makes an interesting relationship is conflict, and we haven't had any of that
mm-hmm.
at all.
I mean, it was an interesting idea to use his blood to, you know, make a vaccine for the Terrigenesis. It's something that any show, movie, storytelling needs to do. It's just whatever you had before, try to set that up for something else, you know. And I mean, I'm sure.
I just remembered. They. It's gonna lead to them trying to help. Lash turn back into Andrew. I think that's also part of like what's driving this this idea.
Mm-hmm. But it's just I'm not a scientist, so I can't say for sure if what they say just makes any sense. But you know what? I can roll with it, whatever. And I'm just glad they used it for plot purposes, you know. And it doesn't seem mm-hmm. so far like. Like it came out of nowhere, you know, they had the steps to make that kind of decision. You know, his whole body changes whenever he touches certain objects. The Terry Judge just didn't kill him. Like, I think it was useful. It's great. also, I just realized too, I think what they should have done with Lincoln is when Gemma was gone, he should have been like the scientist of sorts in the group instead of
Bobby.
Yeah, instead of Bobby, for sure. Or at least he could have been like an assistant to Bobby since she knows how to use that more often. And so, and I get, yeah, they had to use him to like run away and all that. But I think either or it would make sense for him to join. You know, he does trust Daisy. He knows. He messed up with S.H.I.E.L.D. and all that. There are reasons for him to stay. Obviously, him running away was also reasonable. Okay, that was funny. I don't know, he cries much.
I don't...
And I know he did... Lincoln, I mean... he did figure out how Lash found the other Inhumans. But... he could have done that inside S.H.I.E.L.D. So had they kept him in, maybe he and Daisy could have, you know, had more scenes together.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it could have been like that moment how Gemma and Fifth and Seventh.
First mention of the Watchdogs. First mention here of the Watchdogs. Daisy just dropped in.
Mm-hmm.
It actually was.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't know it yet. She's not wrong. If the government got their hands on a vaccine, it's not going to be a choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, we should have gotten something like this.
Except, yeah.
For the very beginning. And like I mentioned too, with Fitz and Simmons, I think it would have been cool for her to see him, you know, building up, you know, relationships within the other teammates, him using his brains to help them out and all that. And then he can have those moments of being like, holy shit, you know, my girlfriend's a badass and all that. Like, it could have worked. He could have had something there.
Yeah. Like how Coulson already knows it's like something's not right here. Like mm-hmm. Talbot wouldn't do this. But bitch, you're the one that kidnapped them? If all of a sudden you cared about that, just get some fucking, like, I don't know, murderers on death row or something like that. It's like, I'm sorry, that was like...
I say, yeah, that's true. I was going to say, like, oh, well, I mean, he's being mind-controlled, but, you know, it's again showing that they're all, they're their individual selves, but yeah, you're right. They could have just gotten criminals, what the heck?
He's the real inside man. It's so awkward.
Yeah.
Damn.
That's actually funny. I was about to say, like, why isn't he, like, you know, taking the wood chips out of him and all that? But then the hand thing, okay, that's cool. That's actually really cool. You got me.
Oh yeah, May took care of it already. Some off-screen like side thing, but it's like, yeah, we know May will take care of it.
Yeah.
What hasn't been revealed yet, it's been alluded to, hasn't been said out loud just yet, that before Afterlife, Lincoln was, I think, an alcoholic. I mean, he had, obviously, issues with addiction. But what Lincoln just admitted there really would have you think that he really depended on Afterlife being there. And it was because of his role in Afterlife that he was able to find equilibrium within himself. And when we first meet him in season two, like, it's the most zen guy in the world. And that has got it under control. I mean, he was the one that taught her in some way. He was the first one that showed her. It's like, look, your powers can be very good. And you can be better for it. And then this moment right here, real quick. This is the first time, I think, finally, that can be considered friends of some sort, which is like, took a while to get there. I mean, these two have known each other for all these two seasons since, I think, season one. But it's basically, maybe the idea is like that. Well, I guess this right here. I'm sorry, I have to keep pausing. In the back of his mind, Coulson's like, did that thing get out?
Yeah.
Because, like,
it makes sense for him to, you know, think that.
Terminator reference.
Oh, yeah. But, dude, those fucking bodies. Holy shit.
Oh, my God. Anyway, the making it, you know, kind of just like short and sweet here. It's like, I think that was an admission on Lincoln's part that he was backsliding, that he was regressing, that all of the things that he was able to control, he can no longer do that because Afterlife is gone. Maybe that's why it feels that the character regressed a lot from season two. I don't know.
I mean, it wasn't like a regression for Daisy of sorts when she got her powers and all, but it can happen, I guess, and that does make sense. But I was mentioning too, it makes sense for Coulson to figure out that there might be someone above
Malik.
Because, yeah, from the very beginning we see him, he is the man in charge, you know? Like, he has that commanding presence to him. So, and we know that the only thing that he was ever looking for was for the thing inside that portal. So, for him to kind of, like, make it seem he's not in charge, like, he's not as commanding as he was before.
Right.
Think it makes sense for him to kind of figure that out?
So, this was a really fun episode for Talbot. We finally got to see them, I think, really become friends. I like that it almost immediately Coulson knew something was up. This was not like in the early days of season two. I think I remember how Sunil Bakshi used that nano mask to kind of like impersonate Talbot, and Coulson and May were like thrown off as like, wait, what? What's going on here? It really just goes to show you how much those two have kind of come a long way. I mean, bringing even Carl Creel back, saying that how, you know, they had deprogrammed him, that he also had that like Hydra comply brainwashing thing going on. A lot of really interesting elements at play here. I mean, it really, when you take a step back, it's kind of impressive how S.H.I.E.L.D. is able to squeeze so many things in just a single episode. I mean, it is a combination of two different kind of episodes. It is one of these episodes that is like memorable for, it's the Talbot episode when, you know, they take his inhuman son and But there's so many moving pieces because it also has to set up, you know, basically what the real threat of Hive is happening in the background above everything else. It's also, you know, setting up a lot of big moments coming up. I just noticed, by the way, Mac wasn't in this episode.
Yeah.
I just realized that. I'm like, huh. I'm just like, I guess he was off on an assignment, or I guess Henry Simmons just, I don't know, maybe he just wasn't made to be here, but we will see him next episode. I don't know what happened, but I don't remember seeing him at all. And I guess his name was not in the credits that I can see. That's interesting. But it's setting up a lot because the next episode has to be the departure of two characters because they have to go on some other TV show, which is a very hard thing to do. So, and at the same time, I think it realizes at the episode that it has to remind us, well, we have to actually start getting invested into a little bit anyway into Daisy and Lincoln, because that's going to be like the crux of the whole season coming up soon. It's all going to like, look, what S.H.I.E.L.D. ultimately has revealed itself at this point is that it's always going to tie things together in ways that you least expected. And it's one of these moving episodes, but so much happens. And there's a lot of really interesting, I know we talked a lot over it, but there's a lot of really interesting intrigue and commentary about like how the world is changing because of these Inhumans and how the world is going to respond to it. Really, really. And of course, I think they explore that more so. Well, they begin really to explore it with this season, but we get further into it with season four, I want to say. We get even mentions of the Watchdogs, which are going to come up in a big way this season. So they even mentioned, of course, they use it as a catalyst for to have some kind of conflict with Lincoln and Daisy. But this whole, like, perhaps maybe Inhuman vaccine is going to come back up when Lash comes back into the picture in the most like inopportune time as always. So it's really impressive, I think, in many ways. Like, this is doing, you know, if the last episode was kind of like a soft, like, welcome back, this episode, on the surface, you would think, hey, it was a fun adventure with Talbot, you know, but it moved heaven and earth to get things where they need to be. Because you're not just setting up the finale, you're not just setting up the rest of the season, But you also have to set up this other outside element, which is like the network saying, hey, we're going to think about maybe having these two characters, which are beloved characters on your show. We need them off the show. We need you to write them off the show so we can use them for a show that in the future, which didn't come to pass. So there's a lot happening here. Here's any comments on that, David, before I move on to the reviews?
No. Pretty much got everything.
Okay. Alex McLevy, who is now taking over for Oliver Sava for the AV Club reviews. S.H.I.E.L.D. finally shows us just how scary this season's villain really is. This week, S.H.I.E.L.D. finally got to do something it's been wanting to do for a long time. It was a moment we could all see coming, but that didn't detract from the enjoyment of its inevitable unveiling. True, it may have annoyed you or delighted you or come and gone so quickly that you didn't get to really consider it. But I, however, was received. But it was received, and it was clearly a moment that was going to happen sooner or later. I refer to, of course, to Phil Coulson finally getting the opportunity to say, give me a hand. Oh, my God. If the inside man was birthed out of the writer's desire to get that little throwaway line off their chests, it wouldn't surprise me in the slightest, as this episode delivered an entertaining mission, but mostly provided a lot of table setting. And when we weren't being treated to either one of those things, it was working awfully hard to sell us on the Daisy Lincoln romance. I'm not going to keep harping on this because we've established that it's a bit of a chore to deal with the seemingly chemistry-free pairing. But moving forward, the show needs to give us a reason to invest in them, because at present, Lincoln has all the appeal of first half of season one Grant Ward. Nothing says sexy like someone who's seemingly defined by their milquetoast relationship. Granted, the sparring session was shot well with a kinetic energy, but unless they're shadow boxing every time they interact, there's no energy here. So let's talk about the good stuff instead. These single mission-centric episodes are a reliable tactic for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because they provide the best structure for the show to play to its strengths of fast-paced action with witty banter. They harken back to the crackerjack fun of the series like Mission Impossible or even the A-Team, the two groups from S.H.I.E.L.D. That S.H.I.E.L.D. often borrows from. While this installment is lacked, I'm sorry. I really apologize. I have to reread that because my voice is going. My brain and my voice are just not on the same page here, so you have to bear with me. While this installment lacked the essential feel of an adventure like a hen in the wolf house, it is at least moved the story forward a couple of beats, largely by bringing Adrian Pazdar as General Talbot more firmly into the fold. The entire thing was a bit rushed. Let's find the inside man. Talbot's the inside man, but Malik has his son. Now we're all on the same team. And yet it maintained enough propulsion to overcome the brevity with which all of this was conveyed. Who else wouldn't mind seeing more of the comic adventures of Agent Coulson and Glenn Talbot? Pazdar and Greg clearly have a ball playing off each other and make for excellent foils. Pazdar has really mastered Talbot's tenuous balance between clever tactician and graceless diplomat, demonstrating how the general's command of strategy doesn't extend to reading people terribly well. And seeing him slowly warm to Coulson as the latter set aside agents potentially capable of capturing Malik to instead save his son was the quiet, emotional heart of the episode. He'll betray Coulson to save his child, but he's not so dumb as to think Hydra would actually let him walk. If they start integrating him more frequently, it could pay real dividends. Not that we still don't have good old Lance Hunter to keep things delightful. Bobby's paramour was in fine form this week, from being the first one to realize the team was being set up, to delivering an impassioned statement of purpose about protecting his friends, to ever so slightly ignoring Coulson's ban on bringing weapons along, to which provides the best exchange of the hour. Hunter reveals weapons. Bobby says, I love you. May says, I don't hate you quite so much. It's been so long since the character has had the chance to really let loose physically by the way that he did during his and May's infiltration of the Hydra Boston contingent. So here's hoping the feisty guy gets an opportunity to again unleash the victory at any cost, inner strength. Some of our most beloved protagonists spent this. Okay, you know what? Hold on. Going forward, the show will have its hands full servicing all the various stories effectively. But last season demonstrated that S.H.I.E.L.D. gets more inventive and resourceful whenever it seemingly paints itself into a corner. That is a beautiful sentence right there, and that really describes the show very well. S.H.I.E.L.D. gets more inventive and resourceful whenever it seemingly paints itself into a corner. Ending with the reveal that Bobby and Lance had stowed away on Malik's place was nice, but even better was the news that Malik and Petrov are going forward with the plan to create a sanctuary for all Inhumans. And we'll see where this all goes. Some stray observations. Anyone else? Forget that. Call me Glenn. Occasionally. It's all loosey-goosey under there. Talbot really had some good lines tonight. Oh, another one. Do me a favor and shoot him first. Episode MVP in retrospect. Daisy got the short end of the stick tonight, having to deliver not only a clumsy romantic subplot, but being made to utter some clunky boilerplate defenses of Inhumans to both Bobby and Lincoln. When she said, "I don't know what's going on with me right now," it felt like an admission by the show that it's using her poorly at the moment. That being said, no one derisively says shake and bake as well as Nick Blood. So I go to Reddit for some reactions. Okay, we have nothing.
Okay.
I'm not gonna go through it. Nothing popped out, so I'm not gonna read it. Eric Goldman, IGN. The return of the Absorbing Man, more about Carl Creel and yeah. It turns out his blood could be a key to curing Inhumans, or at least those who haven't been exposed to Terrigen. And yes, we're once again we're once more using Inhumans as a substitute for a plotline Marvel fans will recognize from the mutant / X-Men lore, as Daisy and Lincoln were on opposite sides of a debate about whether a cure was something that should be even offered, with Daisy now firmly seeing what has happened to her as a gift. The reveal that Talbot was Malik's mole had me highly concerned for a moment, as it would be pretty much impossible to reconcile with his past, where he had proven multiple times that he may be a jerk, but he isn't Hydra. That being the case, it was a relief to learn that he hadn't truly switched sides, but had been coerced into helping Malik. Interesting to have May tell Hunter she felt he had no actual loyalty to S.H.I.E.L.D. and was only there for Bobby, which certainly seems to be laying some groundwork for both of them to take off in Marvel's Most Wanted, which there it is. As for Hive, I'm still confused by what he's doing to his fellow Inhumans like Lucio and Guerra when he whammies them. Are they more powerful? They don't seem to be under more his sway. So what exactly changes for them? And we'll find out more about that later on in the season. Verdict. There was a lot to enjoy this week on S.H.I.E.L.D. as we began to see what it would be like for Talbot to take orders from Coulson. And we're done. He called it great. All right. Let's move on to Ami. I apologize to the viewers this week. My voice is just not there. I think...
We did a podcast yesterday.
I can't. Yeah, I it's a lot right now. And I know it's only a Tuesday that we're recording this, but maybe we should have just waited because I'm just like not... I'm shutting down. So let's go ahead and go to Ami.
Let's go. I genuinely think Malik is underestimating his alliance with this entity, this Inhuman, because they're obviously, he's skeptical at this point. He's devoted himself to doing all of this, but now that he's face to face with it, you can see that there's like an uncertainty, and it was questioned by this thing last episode as well. So like, I'm wondering what's going on, because obviously he was trying to like, I don't want to say scheme against, but he was like putting up his guard. He was kind of trying to like put up some kind of wall in some way, shape or form between him and what's going on in there, you know, offering up another host. He's trying to do all these things as well. And he's like, no, I got this. Grant will suffice. And as we've learned that when he imparts himself, when he like dissipates his body into this sand-like state, if they're Inhuman, becomes one with them. So it is kind of what I was saying. He is creating like this hive-like host. And then he let that one little slip up where he said like we, as if he was speaking as a group. And he can hear what any one of them hears. He can understand the one that doesn't even speak English just because he is one with him now. And even when not in a room, as long as somebody and that person, that Malik, I don't think he was even aware has been taken over. He thought that was in confidence, but it was not, because he overheard it. He heard what was going on in the hallway outside their his little dormitory. And yeah, so like, and then they had them go out and get five healthy humans, because we learned he can't feed on inhumans. They gathered these healthy humans so that he could feed and absorbed their essences and use that to restore Ward's body. At least recover it, heal it, add some volume and definition to it. So he's kind of operating on his own outside of what Malik is actually doing for him. Just as a, because they're both like, I think, hesitant to fully trust one another regardless, which is honestly smart at the end of the day, but whatever. It's fun to watch. But I'm wondering what he's cooking up. Like, we're building an army. I mean, hell, Malik's still going through with collecting these inhumans. And I wonder, like, at one point too, like, if he does feel like he needs to, like, settle things against this, if he stockpiles them all in one place, that's either access for him or for the one he's serving, should he choose to continue to do that faithfully. But yeah, this whole scheme with Talbot, man, that threw me for a loop for a hot minute. Whenever, you know, he flipped on Coulson in that meeting like that, I was like, no fucking way would he be Hydra. For a minute, they had me there. Thankfully, it was just something as simple as they kidnapped his son and was twisting his arm to do this, blackmailing him with his son's life. But it just sucks that this all ended up playing out exactly how Malik needed it to. Bringing Creel back around and having him as an ally in this episode was really interesting, especially the drama that created with Hunter during all of this, you know, given he lost his entire team to this guy. But in his defense, you know, he was under Bakshi's influence. You know, we know that he had this way of rewriting one's brain completely to make them compliant. And a lot of that was done under that, you know, that control. So it is interesting to see him here as this like loyal guard and ally to Talbot and help them get through the situation. And I like that they even flirted with her own like kind of unease at him being on here with the whole like him knocking out Hunter when the kid was found. He's like, I had to protect my cover, so I did have to hurt him a little bit. He ended up saving them in the end. You know, I thought that was all really, really well done. The action scenes, all the espionage, all this was really well handled. Hunter's suspicions and his kind of rogueness, you know, even though it didn't completely ruin the plan, it's within his character to be suspicious and to kind of be this wild card. I like the way that that played in the story, obviously, because he's also emotional over, obviously, having to work with Creel and being suspicious in his own right. Almost cost them the mission for a minute because they were just trying to figure all this stuff out all at the same time. Who is the mole? And then the reveal that it is Talbot only because of his son's kidnapping. All that was really so much fun to watch, you know. On top of all that, you obviously have the tension between Hunter and May because of everything that happened with Andrew. And then everybody's just trying to like find this middle ground in this piece. The whole infiltration to the party with Coulson and the glove, super creative. Love the way that all handled, and Talbot's inability to actually work alongside them because like his like train of thought had him being suspicious of literally everybody at this place. So that was fun. And then you have, you know, Daisy and Lincoln working with the crew back at the base on the inhuman gene and why Creel's resistant to it. You know, he's the only human known to be able to touch the thing and survive it. And I think that's because he could control his makeup. You know, he has, that's his ability, is controlling his, you know, the materials, the elements that his body is made of. I mean, it makes sense to me why he would be resistant to that as well. And they found that if they add his blood to anybody that has the inhuman marker, it can stop teragenesis. It can't turn anybody back that's already gone through it, but it can prevent the actual cocooning aspect of it. So there's a potential to create a vaccine to prevent anybody that could turn from turning. So it gives them this choice, you know, and there's this conversation about it because it is who they are. It is part of them. It's not a disease, even though Lincoln kind of made an argument that it kind of, in a way, by definition could be seen as one, but like they said, they're humans, but with a little bit extra, and that we could prevent that little bit extra from manifesting because, you know, it could do a lot of damage, you know, with Reyna, you know, there's a lot of physical transformation. She, you know, a lot, I mean, she couldn't, if she was in a more accepting place, obviously she could go out and be fine, but like she would cause kind of panic, you know? And then you have someone like Lash who has this compulsion to kill Inhumans. You know, we have this conversation about people getting their hands on weapons and misusing them and whatever. You know, that same concern is now, what if that person becomes a weapon and the wrong person gets these powers, and these powers are the danger? It's a very, very powerful ethical and moral dilemma that they find themselves in with that, because this is kind of different than someone going out and buying a weapon and then misusing it. This is something that is innately part of them. They are this thing. It's like, well, okay, how much of this am I just suppressing who I am? How much of this is basically some semblance of xenophobia? But then again, you know, the human race at this point, you know, by nature, if you strip us of all of our tools, weapons, and all these things, we are just the same meat sticks walking around in our bones and flesh and muscle and all this kind of stuff. Nobody's hands are a laser cannon. What if somebody just doesn't want that to be in there? They should be able to choose that for themselves, you know? And Lincoln made a good point. He's like, would you think Andrew would have wanted choice in this matter? Or do you think we should have just let him become Lash because that's what he needed to be? Like, this is all contingent on what, like, their species needs. It decided there's too many of us, so it created Lash to help snuff them out. So that's a whole other thing right there. I don't know. And then you have this creature that has taken over Ward, and we actually got to see the slug come over and take him over as his body was, you know, exiting this life and all this. And as we learned too, he can only take over dead bodies. So that's confirmed. So he can't infect a living host at all, because that clears up some things also in my head. It's a really fucky situation we're in, and yeah, there's no clean, clear-cut answer to it at the end of the day. And I think at the end of the day, it should be a choice. I don't know, man, because then it's just like, well, what if this person knowingly has a bad track record, and you know, there's a potential for them to turn, but thankfully they caught them before they haven't yet, like a criminal or a serial killer or something like that. At that point, should we allow the choice to happen? Or should we make that choice for them to protect more people? Let's say like Cletus Cassidy, if we had the option to prevent him from becoming an Inhuman, would we give him the choice or would we make it for him? There's just so many ethical and moral dilemmas when bringing up this question, this conversation, but I like that they're having the conversation. But yeah, man,
it's going to be interesting to see where these next few weeks are going to go, I will say, because I mentioned many times already before that when Bobby and Hunter leave, there's something that changes by its very nature, obviously, because mm-hmm. that's kind of a big glaring hole. And we're going to see how that's going to feel like.
Yeah.
But yeah, anything else before we leave today? David, go ahead.
No, I think we pretty much said everything they wanted to say. This was, like, I want to say it's like the slowest episode that we've seen, but not mm-hmm. in a bad way or anything like that. It was just,
no.
We were getting all the information that we needed for what's going to happen next, not just with the characters, but with the world itself. But, you know, I was engaged in it the entire time. You know, I loved every conversation. Like always, the dialogue is always great. But these are just interesting questions that we never get in the MCU. But it's just, I mean, yeah, everyone kills it. Even like the new people that we meet in that little council meeting, just overall good episode, you know? But yeah.
All right. Well, then we're going to go ahead and call it a day there. Thank you so much for tuning in and joining us. And please feel free to leave any comments down below about any of the things that we may have missed, or if you actually want to converse in the dialogue that we have had today about characters. I would really love for people to kind of leave their theories about what went wrong with Daisy and Lincoln. Maybe there are people out there who are like, man, what are you guys talking about? They did a great job with Daisy and Lincoln. Please, we want to keep this dialogue going. And then, of course, I know with the next episode, it's going to be a pretty big one. And I think it may, you know, be a pretty contentious one because it has, you know, the exits of two major characters. With all that being said, thank you so much for tuning in, and we will see you all next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.